اسمي رغد، عمري 7 سنين.
اسمي فاطمة أسامة محمد أبو صفية.
These are the sounds of everyday Gazans.
يوصل صوتي لكل العالم.
A 7-year-old girl, an expectant mother, a breast cancer patient who plays on a special needs basketball team. They are just some of the people trying to survive Israel's brutal onslaught in Gaza for the last 6 months. While Israel says its military campaign is necessary to destroy Hamas and insists it does not target civilians, regular Palestinians are caught in the middle regardless. When you hear about the dire conditions in the enclave, these are the people navigating them. But what are they really feeling? What do they want the rest of the world to know?
I'm literally recording this on the sound of drones and F-16s bombing around me, and I do not know if any of these bombs will hit me before I even send this message. But I want you to know one thing, that you need to do more.
Today, ordinary Gazans on the hopes and dreams they had before the war and how they are coping now that their primary goal is survival. From CNN, this is Tug of War. I'm David Rind. For the last few months, my colleagues Ale Elassor and Yahya Abu Ghazala have been working on a project. They've been asking people on the ground in Gaza to send them voice notes. Because remember, reliable internet and phone signal is extremely hard to come by right now. Often these simple voice memos are the best way to get any information out of Gaza. So between December and January, Ale and Yahya sent these people a few questions to get a sense of what life looked like for them, the challenges and heartache they faced, but also what their life was like before the war, what dreams they had, visions for the future, and if they still have those today. So in this episode, I'm going to step back a bit and let you hear what they sent in.
Just right before the aggression started, I had gotten engaged. I was engaged for 1 week before the aggression started, and I was planning for my engagement party and the announcement party. I was also supposed to get a promotion at work, and all of these things came crashing down in seconds, in literally the blink of an eye.
Afaf El-Najjar is 21 years old. She's a student at the Islamic University. She's originally from Gaza City, but has since moved south to Rafah.
I've seen my childhood house looking like a biscuit, the floors of the house looking like a biscuit because of bombing. I've seen my aunt's house completely demolished, and I've seen my dad coming out of the rubble with blood on his face and on his hands. I've seen the sons and daughters of my cousins with their heads completely smashed and with different wounds. I've seen pictures of my uncle, pictures of my friends completely covered with blood after they were killed in airstrikes. I've seen amounts of destruction that I cannot begin to explain to you. I can't sleep at night because of the amount of nightmares that I get, because of the thoughts that I'm thinking. I'm away from my father, I'm away from so many of my family members, and I just keep thinking about all of them. I have friends who are still stuck in the north and in Gaza. I have friends who are still stuck in Khan Yunis and can't get out of it. I cannot begin to explain how exhausted I am, how terrified I am, how helpless I am. And it feels like there is nothing that I can do to stop any of this. And I'm in so many cases, I'm at the edge of giving up and just losing it.
Oh Well, this is Ghada Al-Ghouda, freelancer journalist from Gaza.
Ghada Al-Kurd is 37. She's currently at a tent shelter in Khan Yunis. She continues to do a job that has become one of the most dangerous in Gaza. She is a journalist.
I've been covering this war since the beginning, since the 7th of October, and I've witnessed many of my colleagues, journalists, they were killed. This is like what keeps me or encourage me to covering this news. This is my message or my duty as a journalist to keep covering and sending all the news about what's going on inside Gaza. The most difficult photos I took by my phone, it was like when I was in a Shifa hospital in Gaza City. I was there and I saw many people were killed. They were coming by ambulances and I saw them in pieces. And I also saw their bodies inside bags. So it was very hard for me. Even the photos of some kids, they were like half of their body. They were killed and only just half of their body also. When you are coming through the roads to south of Gaza City, we saw many of people bodies are on the street. So yeah, this is like the most difficult.
Mahmoud Jerusha is a college student originally from Gaza City. He's just 18 years old.
Well, just like any other young man in this world, I had dreams and ambitions. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to be a professional soccer player. And some of my ambitions is going to university, having a good job, and building a beautiful house. But now it really doesn't matter anymore. I said one of my ambitions is having my own house, and I don't want it. After years of work and exhaustion, I don't want it to be gone in a second, just like what happened to many of my people here in Gaza. Of course, me and my family have experienced a lot. Well, we experienced the feeling of immigration. It was hard on us to leave our house, and it was hard physically also. My family, including my grandparents, had to walk for more than 3 hours on feet just to get to the south. We have also experienced the lack of water, fuel, cooking gas, flour, gasoline, and almost any kind of life supply. We experienced the waiting lines too. Water line, cooking gas line, bread line. Speaking of the bread line, personally, once I waited for 9 hours just to get one bag of bread.
Hello everyone, this is Farida Adil from Gaza City, and I'm going to share with you my experience as a teacher. First of all, the Israel occupation have demolished all aspects of life in Gaza, and there are now almost no schools, hospitals, or mosques left, and the occupation have directly targeted humanity, destroying everything that humans could build. It's destroyed the psychological, physical, and academic aspects of life, making it impossible to live. Academically, the occupation has targeted governmental schools, private schools, as well as agency ones. During the displacement of the Gazans from the center of Gaza to the south, they sought refuge in schools thinking that would be safe. However, the brutality of the occupation then proceeded to destroy most of these too, as well as most other public and private buildings. The idea that schools turn into shelters, which could be destroyed and bombed at any moment, made the experience of seeking refuge in the schools extremely difficult. And we used to sleep on notebooks and our students' books just to rest a bit.
You can hear even more of these voices, along with some really vivid pictures, over at cnn.com/Gaza Voices. We're going to leave a link in our show notes as well. Again, that's cnn.com/Gaza Voices. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tug of War. We've been hearing again from regular Gazans trying to live through this war that has killed more than 33,000 of their neighbors. There are so many teachers and doctors, students who have had their careers and lives completely interrupted by the Israeli bombardment. Mohamed Ghanem is one of those people.
I'm a medical doctor and I'm teaching public health and healthcare management at Faculty of Medicine at Islamic University of Gaza. I have seen a video for bombing the medical school of Islamic University. Actually, it was heartbreaking. I'm thinking always what will be next, how we will deliver the lectures, how the students will gather again, how the staff will gather, what about the offices, what about the labs. And if we want to deliver on-campus teaching, it will be impossible because there is no buildings, there is no labs, there is no offices, and there is no halls to deliver lectures for the students.
Noor Share, meanwhile, is a medical student. She's 23 years old and was just trying to continue her education when the war broke out. That's now on pause.
How I've been feeling every day. I don't know, sometimes I feel numb. Sometimes my heart aches so bad, so bad. Sometimes I just don't feel anything. Sometimes I feel like death is too close to me. I don't know how I feel. Sometimes I just don't know how I feel. I've seen horrible, 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 horrible things. When one of my neighbor's houses was bombed, I saw one of my neighbors and a close friend of ours cut into two pieces. I also saw some other relatives and some other neighbors whose faces were no longer recognized. Like you can't even recognize their face, or I don't know, just looking at body parts. I had to like in the hospital. I had to help my family recognize our relatives through looking at their hands and their fingers and their rings and their hair. Their faces were not recognizable. Some were smashed completely, others with burns that we've never ever seen before. And I've never ever studied in med school, anything like that. We've seen the worst. You know, sometimes we try to console each other, telling each other that, well, if you hear the sound of these F-16s or whatsoever, it means that it already emptied its load somewhere else, and it means that we're not the target. And it makes me think that why would that even make me feel satisfied or safe or anything like that? Because it emptying its load somewhere else means that another family got bombed at the second. And these are all Gazan families. These are all my people. None of this is okay. None of it. None of that should make me feel satisfied or safe or anything. Well, I don't know how I'm gonna be able to finish med school. Like, I don't know if they're gonna rebuild my med school here or if we're gonna leave and do it somewhere else. I do not know. But I know one thing, that none of this is going to stop me from purchasing that if I make it alive out of this.
When our colleagues reached out to these Gazans, they had one final question for them. if you could reach the people who haven't been watching or who have but don't seem to care, what would you say to them? What is your message for the rest of the world? This is what they had to say.
I'm calling all the humanity to stop this genocide. This is a genocide. If you are a human, please help to stop this genocide. Please help to stop this humanitarian crisis. I'm not only calling the Muslim countries. I'm not calling only the Arab countries. I'm calling all the humans. If you are a human, you should act to stop this genocide.
Well, the message I want to send for all over the world that you have to see the people of Gaza, the civilian people. You have to see their sufferings. You have to believe in their right to live and right to have a good life without any problems. They want peace. They don't want any other war anymore. It's enough for them, like every 2 years, every 3 years. And I have to send their message to all over the world.
This war put me in a state of shock after I had seen how the international organizations deal with the ongoing painful events here in Gaza. And it really disappointed me, because I thought they were able to make a change in people's life for the better and remove injustice and oppression. But it turned out they're unable to do anything, like for example, issuing a ceasefire decision, providing Gaza with food aids or even medical aids. The unfortunate thing that I started to doubt they considered us as humans who deserve to live at least normally.
I think one of the most important messages that I want to send to people around the world would be that me, my family, my relatives, my friends, the people I'm currently staying with, the people I've met because of this aggression, we are as much human as anyone else in the world is. And we have dreams and we have ambitions and we have things that we want to accomplish and we have stories that we want to tell just like everybody else. And that's why I want everyone to know that the littlest things that they do, posting, protesting, sending emails, calling representatives and boycotting, all of these things are extremely crucial and important. And collectively, together, we can move mountains. And that's why we shouldn't ever lose momentum. And we should always keep talking about the Palestinian cause and working for it. And working to end this genocide that we've been living for more than 80 days now.
The message I want to send to the world is, we know that you're against this. We know that you want this to stop. We know that you tried. We know that some of you protested. We know that in your heart, under the name of humanity, you believe that this should not happen to humans, but it's still not enough. We need you to do more. I'm literally recording this under the sound of drones and F-16s bombing around me, and I do not know if any of these bombs will hit me before I even send this message. But I want you to know one thing, that you need to do more, and you can do more. You need to pressure your governments to stop this. A ceasefire, we need a ceasefire. You need to stand with us. You need to stand with everyone in Gaza, because there's stronger ways than anything you tried. Because none of this stopped this yet.
And just a reminder, you can see pictures and hear even more of these stories over at cnn.com/Gaza Voices. That's cnn.com/Gaza Voices. A link to the page is in our show notes. Tug of War is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Paolo Ortiz and me, David Rind. Our senior producer is Haley Thomas. Dan DeZula is our technical director, and Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of CNN Audio. We get support from Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dianora, Lenny Steinhardt, Jamis Andres, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namorau. Special thanks to Ale Alasor, Yahya Abu Ghazala, Nadim Mouadi, Matt Dempsey, Janie Boschma, Byron Manley, Will Mullery, Caroline Patterson, and Katie Hinman. We'll be back next week on Wednesday. Talk to you then.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.